Support for WILL comes from the Friends of WILL and from Busey, empowering individuals with financial education through their Resource Center. For online calculators, planning checklists, and articles, visit Busey.com. Busey, your dream, our promise.
From the Land de Quinte University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 7th day of March, 2016. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel. He's at Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois. And a bit later in the program, we'll take a look at the cash grain segment with the folks at the Andersons from right here in Champaign County. Along the way, we'll update you about the agricultural news for the afternoon. And as we close out our time together, we'll take a look at the weather forecast up with the guys up at Wrist Pulse in Chicago, right here on this Monday afternoon edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Let's check the numbers as they finished up in Chicago for this Monday afternoon. Futures in the corn pit finished higher, $3.55. The final trade for the March contract up a half. July at 3.59, three quarters higher, The July at 3.64 and three quarters up 1 1/4. And December, 3.79 1/2 in the corn pit, up 1 1/2 cents. March bean futures up three at $8.73 1/2. The May at 8.81 3/4, up 3 1/4. And July at $8.87 1/4, 2 3/4 higher. November beans, $8.93, up 2 cents. Bean meal futures for the day. Nearby March at $2.68.50, 80 cents higher. The bean oil up 22 at $30.95. Soft red winter wheat, the March contract, $3.03 higher at $4.57 3/4. July at $4.69, up 2 1/4. And July hard red at $4.80 1/4, up 2 1/4. Live cattle futures in Chicago finished at $135.92 1/2, 42 1/2 cents lower. The March feeders down 60 at $157.90, and April lean hog 65 lower at $70.15. In the outside markets at this point, we see the energies trading the ethanol at $1.39 1/2. That's 0.9 cents higher. Crude oil futures in the April contract at $39.90, $1.98 higher for the day. And gasoline on the RBOB, that's up 0.6 cents at $1.39 2/10 per gallon. Diesel fuel at $1.22 1/10 is a nickel and 0.9 cents higher. In natural gas for the day at $1.69 1/2, up 2 9/10 cents. You, of course, are listening to Illinois Public Media. You may find us online at willag.org. That's willag.org. There you'll find all of our agricultural programming each and every business day of the year.
Since 1985, Stuart Peterson has offered strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. The firm develops dynamic strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information is available at stuart-peterson.com.
Checking some of the other outside markets at this time, the Dow Jones Industrial Average at 16,997, up 31 points. The U.S. dollar trading 97.08. That's 0.26 lower for the day. And the gold futures on the afternoon at $1,268.75 are down $2. Here's what the weather forecast looks like for the Urbana-Champaign area tonight. Mostly cloudy, a low of 55 degrees, south winds at about 15 miles an hour. Not bad for the middle to the beginning of the month of March, gusting to highs of 22. This evening, tomorrow, 20% chance of showers after the noon hour. Cloudy, a high of 66 for the all-day ag outlook at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. It'll be breezy out there on a south wind at 14 to 20, gusting to 30, and then Tuesday night a shower is likely, mainly after midnight, a cloudy and 56-degree low with a south wind at 11 to 14, gusting to 20 miles an hour. Chance of precipitation on Tuesday evening set at 70%. Wednesday, occasional showers, some thunderstorms, a high of 64, 80% chance of rainfall. Wednesday night, we'll have another chance of rainfall set at 80%. We'll drop to 55 degrees, and then on Thursday, showers are likely, cloudy, and a high of 65. In the area, the chance of rainfall set at 60%. On Friday, a chance of showers, mostly cloudy and 62. Saturday, showers, mostly cloudy and 64. And showers on Sunday with a 60-degree top. You're listening to Illinois Public Media. We'll take a more complete look at the weather forecast when we get to the bottom of the half hour. We'll talk with the folks at Wrist Pulse in Chicago, Illinois.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 13th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold can be found at AgriGold.com.
It's a Monday afternoon. It's the 7th day of March. Three really important items happening this week. The first one is the All Day Ag Outlook at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. If you have your tickets in hand, please do be there at 8 a.m. Central Time, 9 o'clock in the Eastern Time Zone. We'll start at 8:30, actually 8:25 sharp Central Time, so make sure you're on hand. Secondly, the Wednesday USDA report is due out at 11 o'clock. Check out the willag.org website and you'll find all the USDA numbers there. I'll post my Twitter account into the website itself. It will start updating right there at 11 o'clock. And I think I have found a way finally to get the numbers from the CME or from the USDA to update directly into our website pretty quickly. So I think that'll happen within 15 or 20 seconds, too. We'll find out whether it actually works. I spent some time over the weekend working out some details on that one. And then on Friday, I'll be in Rockford for the Illinois Soybean Association Soybean Summit. Now, you can still register for this one if you'd like. So come up to the Soybean Summit. This is the third in the series. The first one was in Effingham, and then the second one in Peoria, and this finally the third one. This is a great day. Kicks off around 8 o'clock in the morning. Actually, they open the doors at 7. We start at 8:15, and we'll run through about 4 in the afternoon. That is the Soybean Summit in Rockford, Illinois. You can still register online for that one. You'll need to go to the Illinois Soybean Association homepage. It's ilsoy.org. That's ilsoy.org. Now, let's turn our attention to the marketplace. On the line with us is Kurt Kimmel. He's at Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Kurt. Going to be a busy week for me here. How about for you?
Yeah, we're seeing all kinds of numbers and meetings this week. Plus, too, I'm going to head to Florida here about midweek. So let you guys sort it out as we go through the week.
You let them sort it out. Hey, well, you're going to miss some good weather here, at least some warm weather, that's for sure. But I'll bet conditions will be really nice in Florida. Kind of your respite after the big all-day ag outlook tomorrow, I suppose, huh?
Yeah, it's going to be some good conversation. It's always interesting to see what everyone has to say and also visit with some good loyal listeners and see what's on their minds. But, yeah, we'll see how that day goes. And like you mentioned, we got Wednesday's monthly supply-demand report. Numbers are just about coming in unchanged from the previous estimates. I think wheat ending stocks, the average guess is 975 versus 967. Corn, 1854 versus 1837. Beans, 452 versus 450. So, and the same thing on the world numbers, just go right down the sheet here. So, we'll see if there's any adjustments for, say, as those numbers come out there Wednesday morning.
And March is not really a time when they make a lot of adjustments, but you never know what USDA and the World Agricultural Outlook Board will do. It's the end of the month that probably matters more when we get to the acreage report and the grain stocks numbers. Just a quick note on that, because I'll be busy during the day tomorrow. The closing market report I've already recorded, and I won't post it up to the website until the time comes tomorrow, but tomorrow I know you'll get a chance to listen to Scott Irwin and to Daryl Good during that, and Daryl will take up the grain stocks report at the end of the month. And Scott Irwin wrote an article about, along with Daryl last week, about the El Nino and the impact it has on corn crops in the Midwest over time since about 1950 or 52, something like that. Really interesting article. So that'll happen as folks are headed home, Kurt, from the All Day Ag Outlook. They'll be able to get one more thing for the day, and I think it'll be a really good one. It's all up and done, and I recorded that this morning, so I'm looking forward to that. Okay, so the other thing that we need to talk about is the marketplace as it happened in Chicago. Both the corn and the soybeans and the wheat, in fact, all finished higher for the day. This is for corn and soybeans, I know, the second day in a row. How important is this, and does it make much of a difference? And are we just, you think, climbing inside of our trading range, or are we setting up for something different?
Well, first of all, there's a couple more dates you want to kind of watch between now and the end of the month. It'll be March 15th. That's the Ides of March. It goes back to Julius Caesar days of possible turn dates. Informa is supposedly going to be off their acreage estimates on March 18th. And, of course, the first day of spring, you can see often train changes March 20th. So there's a few more in there you overlooked there, Todd.
Well, we can get a bunch of dates in, that's for sure. There are lots of important
dates.
Now,
but back to your original question, I think it was, some commodity fund buying. We saw record short positions being established in corn, particularly by the commodity funds. Even though corn was up 5-6 cents off a low, where wheat and beans have rallied about 30 cents off their lows, corn kind of the struggler in here, but beans kind of test the upper end of the trading range. The trade's kind of watching 890, whether we can get above those highs or not. We'll see if that materializes. But a lot of spread activity, too. One thing you got to kind of watch is the hedge funds. And, hedge funds often hedge their bet, in a sense. And what I mean by that, if they're long Monsanto stock, they might be short corn or vice versa. And if you notice the hedge fund's position, they're short, heavily short the grains, particularly corn, but they're heavily long the crude oil and energy products. So we got to kind of watch that type of spread activity as we move through the spring, see if there's some unwinding of that as we get into early spring.
Any other tidbits that we ought to talk about this afternoon, whether that's in the grains or the livestock, either one?
Well, there's always something to talk about, I guess, but I think that as we move forward in through here in this weather, starts to cooperate and guys get in the field, I think you got to be prepared to take advantage of some up moves in through here. As we go into the month, like you mentioned, the acreage report, if we go ahead and see the numbers come out as expected, around 82.5 to 83 million bean acres and upwards towards 90 million acres in corn, and spring weather cooperates, and we maybe get those numbers a little bit more, that puts the emphasis on the supply-demand balance sheet, that we have to have some type of weather event to lower yield. So that's kind of the key as producers. This weather forecast is going to be more and more critical here as we go into the growing season.
Looking really forward to seeing you at the All Day Ag Outlook tomorrow.
Very good. See you in the morning.
Mm-hmm. That is Kurt Kimmel. He and Pete Manhart, both from Bates Commodities, will join us for the All-Day Agricultural Outlook at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana tomorrow. For those of you with tickets, we open the doors at 8 o'clock Central Time, 9 o'clock in the Eastern Time Zone. We'll kick off right at 8:30, and we'll finish up by about 2 o'clock in the afternoon Central Time. So you'll have a chance to listen to the closing market report on the way home. And just for those who aren't able to come, I will have a brand new report for you. In fact, I have put it together already. Daryl Good and Scott Irwin take up the marketplace. Daryl takes up grain stocks in particular. And Scott takes a look at the work that he and Daryl had done on an article posted to the website farmdocdaily.illinois.edu last week that deals with El Nino and the impact on particularly corn in the Midwest. So that should be a good one as well. Don't forget to visit our website. You can find all kinds of information at willag.org. That's willag.org. In today's agricultural news, lower commodity prices over the past 12 months are opening the door for payments under the ARC and PLC programs in the 2014 Farm Bill. Since July, corn prices have decreased 15% and soybeans are off 10% from their contract highs. With the loss in price, Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack says he expects payments in 2015 to be higher than in 2014.
Well, we made $5.2 billion in payments under ARC and PLC, predominantly under ARC, to 900,000 producers, roughly 45% of producers. So I think for the producers who need the help, it was certainly helpful. I think this year we'll probably see payments that will be a little higher. Those were 2014 payments, so 2015 payments will be paid later this year. I think the system, there are always tweaks to the system. I think we still have to give some farmers some flexibility in terms of the counties that they select from an administrative standpoint. I think in a new program, you have to have enough flexibility when somebody realizes they may have made a mistake about which county they designated. We need to give them another opportunity to redesignate that so that they get themselves in a better place. I know there are constant concerns about how the county averages are established. There has to be a system. We think the best system is to look at NAST numbers first. If there aren't NAST numbers, RMA numbers. If there aren't RMA numbers, then we go to the state committee. So there's a system, that at least a logical progression in terms of how that is done.
That's U.S. Secretary of Agriculture Tom Vilsack talking about the ARC and the PLC programs. You can learn more about both on the FarmDoc Daily website and see some projected payments for the whole of the United States and specific for Illinois as well. Those based on the article posted to the FarmDoc Daily website by University of Illinois agricultural economist Gary Schnittke. Schnittke will make a presentation during tomorrow's All Day Ag Outlook at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. Let's stay now with agricultural policy, but move to the GMO debate. The New York Times has posted an editorial. The executive vice president of the Northeast Dairy Food Association has written that there's no need for GMO labeling. Bryce Krupke last week wrote Senator Pat Roberts' approach to labeling is realistic and that it shows leadership and provides good guidance. The Kansas Republicans' voluntary labeling bill passed the Senate Agriculture Committee Tuesday. The following day, a group of Democrats introduced a mandatory labeling bill in the Senate. The House passed a voluntary labeling bill last year, but the Senate never considered the bill. In the editorial, Krupke writes, GMOs are very safe to consume for both humans and animals and have proven benefits for farmers, consumers, and the environment, adding the U.S. has been consuming GMO corn safely for more than two decades. In regards to state laws, such as Vermont's, slated to take effect in July, he says state-by-state labeling laws will not be consistent, making it very difficult for food manufacturers to stay in compliance. And finally today, this weather note. The latest U.S. drought monitor shows little to no drought conditions throughout the Midwest. However, it does show a few counties in northern Minnesota that have been designated abnormally dry. Still, USDA meteorologist Brad Rippey says the Midwest hasn't seen an eight-week stretch with such little drought since 2005. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Find us online at WILLAG.org. There we post all of our agricultural programming from the Opening Market Report to the Closing Market Report and everything in between, including Commodity Week, which will be recorded as usual on Thursday of this week. Jerry Goodell will be our special guest, along with panelist Pete Manhart, Elaine Cobb, and somebody from the Anderson. Should be a great afternoon at 3 p.m. We'll post that up to the website at about 5 o'clock on Thursday evening. And don't forget that on Wednesday of this week, USDA will release its latest World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimates report, and we'll have those up on our website within a few seconds. You can always find them there. I'll post my Twitter feed at Commodity Week right into the website. And I think I've devised a way, I'm pretty proud of this, for the USDA charts page to be updated automatically at 11 o'clock as well. So we'll see whether that works, but all coming up this week right here from Illinois Public Media. Now, up next, the National Pork Producers Council says trade, environmental regulations, and the outcome of the November elections top the priority list for 2016. Michael Clements has more.
NPPC's new president, John Weber, outlined the priorities at the conclusion of the 2016 Pork Industry Forum in Indianapolis, Indiana, over the weekend. Weber says pork producers will be ready to act following the November elections.
We do not get involved in the political side of the election at all, but we have to live with what that election brings to this country, and it can bring a lot of work for us depending on what happens. And so I think that's going to become a challenge as we approach the fall season and into next year, bringing legislators up to speed as to who we are and what we do and the trade policies we want, and working with new people, probably throughout the whole administration, very likely to be new people. And so I think that's going to be a big challenge for NPPC in the coming year, is just the political outcome of this year's election.
Following the election, Congress is expected to consider approval for the Trans-Pacific Partnership Trade Agreement. Weber says NPPC will work with Congress in an effort to get the deal past the finish line. As for environmental regulations, Weber says NPPC will continue to express the effect of the Environmental Protection Agency's Waters of the U.S. rule on producers. He says the fate of the rule could lie with the Supreme Court.
We come back to the political picture again. Who's going to get elected? What party is going to get elected into the administration, and how that may affect the Supreme Court justices? This rule is very liable to end up there at some point in time. Probably will be under litigation for most of this coming year. But we certainly need to share producers' concerns about the rule the way it was written and what impacts it would have to producers if it was fully implemented.
Finally, the Veterinary Feed Directive, which takes effect at the start of 2017, will change the way all livestock producers use antibiotics. He says implementation of new on-farm procedures is already underway for the pork industry, but remains the biggest challenge for 2016.
Producers need to take a close look at their herd health, their vaccination programs, how they can get by with using less antibiotic in their feeds, and then doing some measurements, watching how pigs perform, what their rates of gains are, and so on and so forth. But I think it's going to become very clear to producers as time goes on here that judicious use, economic use of antibiotics is going to be critical at the farm level.
Reporting from Indiana, I'm Michael Clements.
Our thanks to Michael Clements. He's from the National Association of Farm Broadcasting. Let's check now the cash grain segment. Brian Stark is on the phone line from the Andersons right here in Champaign County. Good afternoon to you, Brian. Thanks for being with us.
Good afternoon, John. Thanks for having me.
Well, tell me about movement of corn over the last month and whether producers have been willing to do so. And if they haven't been willing to do so, if they've done so anyway, I suppose.
Well, I think the only movement we've seen in the last 30 to 45 days has been onto free DP. They're certainly not aggressively selling it. We saw a little bit of selling towards the end of last month. March 1 tends to be a lot of bills come due and some cash generated. But I think for the most part, since that time, you've seen kind of a slowdown in movement. And I anticipate that being the case here the balance of this month, unless the board were to rally.
So if we slam the bin door shut now, when will they open back up? Not till July?
Well, I would say probably late May, early June. I think that's something that the producer will probably wait and see how planning progresses. And then if the board doesn't react by then, may be forced to make some decisions here in early summer.
And how does the board feel to you?
I think it's still range-bound. I don't think there's anything. The only thing you could attest to a friendly nature would be the large short that the funds have managed to build. But if you look out fundamentally, demand continues to be soft. Speculation that exports at some point will eventually be lowered again in the S&D report. We just can't generate enough fundamental bullishness for the market to break outside its recent trading range, and obviously the strength of the dollar has had a lot to say about our ability to or inability to grow that demand base.
A quick assessment of the soybean side of the ledger?
I would say that the one thing that's helped beans here towards the end of last week, the beginning of this week, is the political turmoil down in Brazil and the rally in the real. I think obviously that narrows the competitiveness for our beans and helps the bean market want to rally. But again, it's going to be capped based on the significant long the producer holds.
Still range bound?
Still range bound moving forward, yes.
And what are your bids for the day?
Tonight we are 362 cash corn. New crop corn is 354. Cash soybeans 872. New crop beans 868, and new crop wheat is 444.
Looking forward to having you folks at the Beef House tomorrow in Covington.
Sounds good. Thank you.
All right. That's Brian Stark. He is with the Andersons from right here in Champaign County. Joins us on the closing market report from Illinois Public Medium. When we come back, we'll talk with Mark Russo. He's at Risk Pulse in Chicago, Illinois. He'll tell us all about the agricultural weather forecast in the Midwest and around the globe.
This stock and commodity report is made possible with support of the Friends of WILL and Bates Commodities in Normal. Bates Commodities can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at batescom.net.
It's National Crown Roast of Pork Day. Cultivation of pigs dates back to at least 5,000 BC. It is believed pigs were domesticated from the wild boar in either China or the Near East. In 1493, Christopher Columbus loaded hogs into his ship, crossed the Atlantic, and introduced them to the Americas. Until the 20th century, pork in the U.S. was traditionally an autumn dish, coming to the dinner table after fattening during the summer. By the way, pork is the most widely eaten meat in the world. On this day in agricultural history in 1804, John Wedgwood founded the Royal Horticultural Society. The Society's first garden was in Kensington in 1818. In 1849, Luther Burbank was born. He developed many new varieties of fruits and vegetables, including the Burbank potato, the Shasta daisy, over 100 varieties of plums and prunes, and 10 varieties of berries. By the way, the Burbank potato is the most widely cultivated potato in the U.S. McDonald's French fries are made exclusively from the Burbank. In all, Burbank developed over 800 strains and varieties of plants over a 55-year career, including a spineless cactus used for cattle feed. And in 1914, the Coca-Cola Bottlers Association was formed. Coca-Cola was born in Atlanta, Georgia in 1886. The first newspaper ad soon followed in the Atlanta Journal, inviting people to try the new and popular soda fountain drink. By the way, sales during the first year averaged 9 drinks a day. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois, for 100 years offering financial products and services specifically for the agricultural industry, including farm real estate and operating loans, crop insurance, and point-of-sale financing, as well as farm cash management solutions.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on a Monday afternoon. Mark Russo joins us from Risk Pulse out of Chicago to take a look at a soggy but kind of warm weather forecast for the Midwest. Tell me about conditions for the growing winter wheat crop across the United States.
Well, the most interesting item at the present time and the overall the focus of attention is what's going on in the Plains hard red winter wheat belt and the lack of precipitation over the last 30 to 45 days in areas of Kansas, Oklahoma, and Texas. Now, we've seen some above normal temperatures, in fact, some record-setting warmth here in recent weeks, and that's going to continue here as we go through this week, and that has resulted in the crop coming out of dormancy as much as 3-4 even some areas 5 weeks ahead of when it normally does. And so crop moisture demands as a result are on the rise, and now more moisture is needed to help improve soil moisture for the growing winter wheat crop in Kansas, Oklahoma, and Texas. We don't see much here in the way of precipitation over the next couple of weeks. There will be a feed of moisture into Texas, but outside of the main hard red acreage, and then that feed of moisture will stream into the Midwest and on into the Delta region where copious amounts of rain, in fact, some flash flooding is likely here in areas of the south central U.S. and southern Midwest this week as a result of a heavier rainfall. And for the Midwest soft red winter wheat crop, that's the excess of rainfall is a detrimental item in that part of the U.S.
So just enough there that it's going to give the wheat wet feet and cause disease, seedling diseases as it comes out of dormancy, or what are we thinking about?
Certainly the risk is beginning to increase there. Now, they haven't been that wet here in recent weeks, but they are starting to turn wetter, especially this week. That looks to continue into next week, even potentially beyond, as we look at the last part of March and into the early part of April. So certainly something to keep an eye on with this more active pattern, specifically in the central U.S. But again, for the Plains hard red belt, none of these systems here are producing significant rains there.
It's been warm across both of those areas. Is it going to stay that way then too?
It is, especially over the next week to 10 days. There are some indications that by the end of next week, we do see some cooler weather beginning to filter, well, from the western U.S. into the central U.S., cooling down back to something closer to normal. So that's something to watch here, especially as we begin to trend even cooler, meaning if we do drop below normal at the end of the month, that's something to watch from a winter kill risk for winter wheat later on this month.
Hey, Mark, thanks so much.
You're welcome, Todd.
Mark Russo, of course, is with Risk Pulse. He's out of Chicago, Illinois, joins us on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. Do visit our website at willag.org. A whole series of meetings yet to come up. We've got a meeting, of course, tomorrow at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. I'll be in Rockford on Friday, here in Champaign on Monday next week, and then we've got a meeting in Taylorville and one in Joliet, that with the Chicago Farmland Forum. I'm Yul Via Extensions, Todd Gleason.